So we're on Daf Samach Dalet Amid Beis, and we're five lines up from the bottom. And it says the following. Samach Dalet Amid Beis. B'siyata Dishmaya, I call it. Samach Dalet. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Kol Makom Sha'asru Chachamim Mipnei Maris Ha'ayin. Whenever we're afraid of people suspecting him of doing some misdemeanor, is that it's also afilu bechadre chadorim osur. Now, as you might claim that it should only be osur in public, where the, you know, if he's in the public eye, people will suspect him, says Rabbi Yehuda Merav, no, it's prohibited even in private, even in chadre chadorim, like a chamber inside a chamber. And basically, I think what he's saying is that Maris Ayin defines the mice as a mice avera. In other words, we're only going to use the measuring rod of does it look suspicious in the eyes of the spectator to define it as something which is now prohibited. And once the Rabbanim prohibited it, it's prohibited straight across the board, even in a private place, even in Chadre Chador. So let's say, for example, I'm not sure if the Gemara is going to talk about this, but there's a famous case in Beitza. Oh, okay. You know what? It's coming around the bend. I didn't realize it. The famous sugya of Chadre Chadorim is in Beitza, and the question is, you're not allowed to take an article of clothing that was wet before Shabbos, and on Shabbos put it out in the sun. And that's because people think that you washed it on Shabbos. The question is, are you allowed to put it on a table or a chair in your own home where nobody will see it? That's going to be this issue. So this is relevant here to the Mishnah in this Masechta, because in the Mishnah, Tnan, Velo Zug Afal Pisha Pokuk. And the previous perek is about the animals. You remember that they're not allowed to go out with certain articles into Rishus HaRabim. And the Mishnah speaks about bells, right? They used to attach bells to the animal. Now, if the bell, you know, has that, you know, what's it called, the knocker inside of it, you know, that's going to make noise, that's going to make sounds, that's one thing. But here we're talking about pokuk. Pokuk means that it's plugged up in a way that it won't make any noises. So what's the reason why this is asur? So he says here, based on Rashi, that even though he stuffed up this bell and it doesn't make any noise, but nevertheless the onlooker suspects that he's taking the animal to the market. In other words, when they wanted to market animals, so they sort of beautified the animal by putting bells on it, attaching bells. So people are going to think that he's on his way to the market. And that gives a very bad impression for people. So it's also midin maris ayin. So that's one brisa. I mean, that's actually the Mishnah. And then we have a brisa, v'tanya either. We have another brisa that says, pokeik la zug b'tzavara. He says he's allowed to go out with this animal with the bell. If he plugs up the bell, umitayel ima b'chatzer. He's only allowed to take it out into a courtyard because that's already a private property, private area. So there's no one there who's going to suspect him of being on his way. You know, he's taking it out to the market. So it seems from this brisa that it all depends whether you're in the public eye or not. We're only worried about Maris Ayin if he goes out into the Rishus HaRabim, a public area. And you know, if he's in the public eye, they'll suspect him of, as we said before, going on his way to the market. But if, on the other hand, he's in a chatzer, which is private property, it's got mechitzos, and no one's there to see him, then it's permitted. So this seems to contradict Rav Yehuda Marav, who says Chadri Chadorin. So Gemara answers Tanoihi. This issue about Chadri Chadorim is a machlokas Tanoim. Tisanya, now we go to Samachayim and Aleph. Shotchan Bechama. Oh, so this is the Brisa that's quoted in Masechta Beitza. Let me just see if I'm right. I remember this from Beitza. Yeah, Beitza. Shotchan Bechama. So you have wet clothing, and the question is, are you allowed to stretch it out in the sun? And there's a machlokas here between the Tanakama and Rabbi Shimon. According to the Tanakama, is Shotchan Bechama. Avalo Kenegad Ha'am. In other words, you're allowed to do this in a private area, secluded area, but not in public. So we see that the Tanakama, this Brisa, does not accept Chadri Chadorim. On the contrary, in Chadri Chadorim, it's permissible. But Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon Osrim, they hold that once it's Osir in public, and there's Maris Ayin, then even in Chadri Chadorim, it's Osir. So we have now Machlokes Tanoim on this issue of Rabbi Yehuda Merav with regard to Chadri Chadorim. Now, the Mishnah that we're studying here wonders whether you're allowed to go out in Rishus HaRabim with things that are attached to the body for health reasons. For example, Moch Sheba Ozna, like they would plug up their ears with like Q-tips kind of thing, cotton, wads of cotton. And the Mishnah allows you to do that because it's sort of like an attachment to the body. And that cotton would absorb, you know, unnecessary wax that came out of the ear. Is Tani Rami Bar Yechezkel Zabraisa V'husha Kosher Bi Ozno. And in order to allow wearing this in your ear on Shabbos in a public area, in a Rishus HaRavim, we need to add another condition. And that is that it's got to be tied down. In other words, if it's loose, we're afraid that he might, if it falls out of his ear, he might carry it in Rishus HaRavim. Apparently this moch is not something that's so inexpensive. It's not so, you know, today, you know, for a couple of piastres, you buy yourself 100 Q-tips, you know. Even though, I'll be honest with you, I'm always looking for Q-tips. I never know where they disappear. But it's like Band-Aids, you know. You have thousands of Band-Aids. When you need it, you don't find it.
You don't find it.
But in any event, the bottom line is that it's not enough just to say that that if it falls out, you know, he'll throw it on the ground, but he might actually carry it. It's worth something. So in order to guarantee that it doesn't fall off, he's got to tie it down. Yeah, you know, I'm wondering how you tie down, a plug inside the ear. Maybe, you know, they have people with earplugs, you know, they have those, I mean, with hearing aids, and they have this round thing that goes around the ear, you know what I mean? Maybe that would be sufficient. I don't know. Now, this is going to be the issue of menstrual pads. Is a woman allowed to wear a menstrual pad in Rishus HaRavim? Tani Rami Bar Yechezkel. It says in the Mishnah, B'moch, when she puts this moch either in a private place, or sometimes they had a moch that they would put underneath the sandal as a kind of an insert. Like today, it's very common that you have inserts into your shoe. It makes it a little bit easier for the foot to fall down. And the Mishnah allows a woman and a man, for that matter, to wear these inserts in his shoes. Is Tani Rabbi Yechezkel, again, consistently, this Brisa says, V'usha kosher lo b'sandala. It's got to be tied down. It's not enough that you put it inside the shoe. I guess you would have some sort of adhesion which would attach this insert into the bottom of the shoe. That's what I'm thinking. Ubimoshes kinulo linidosa, right, these pads, is sova ravi bar chamul member who shik shuro la ben yirei chesela, that she would have to tie it down. Because again, it might fall off. Again, in all these cases, you really wonder why she, if it fell out, why she would put, you know, carry it. I guess maybe she doesn't, it's not so accessible. I mean, the inserts, I understand, you know, that's a whole manufacturing enterprise, you know, that you have to get the exact insert that fits the shoe. I guess the mochlin idasa was also something that was expensive. Amar Rava, in this case, he objects to Rami Bar Yechezkel, and he says, Afal Pishenu Kosher La, she's not going to bother picking up this menstrual pad once it was lost. Kaven Demoyes Lo Asila Suye. If it falls off, she's not going to bother picking it up. I was only wondering, you know, you're not allowed to litter, so maybe she would look for the nearest rubbish pan. I don't know. But anyway, I guess that's not an issue. Boy, minei Rab Yirmiyahu mi Rab Abba, asa sola beis yad mahu. So now we have a situation where it's not so mos, right? If the pad is full of blood, you know, you don't want to handle it. But let's say they had these, you know, very high class pads that had a base yad to it, and it was, you know, it had a little bit of a handle, a round handle. So in such a case, Rabbi Yirmiyah thought that maybe she might actually grasp it and carry it home, because it's not mos in this case. Omarlei, so Rabbi Abba answered mutter. She's allowed to, even in this case, either because it's not worth her while to take it home, or because it's not repulsive, because it's still to some extent repulsive. Itmar, we have something nami similar. Omer Rav Nachman Bar Oshia, Omer Rav Yochanan, Osa Sola Beis Yad Muter. Honestly, I don't understand why he doesn't add the word afilu. I would say afilu asa sola beis yad mutter. It's mutter in a case where it's very easy for her to carry it home because it has a beis yad to it. I don't know. But anyway, that's, I think, what he means. Rabbi Yochanan nafik behu lebei midrasha. Ah, Rabbi Yochanan would stuff his ears with these kinds of plugs, and they weren't tied down, he would leave the Beis Medrash and walk home through Rishus Aram. But his colleagues disagreed with him. They held, as we saw in the Braisa here, Rami Bar Yechezkel, that it has to be tied down. And this was not tied down to his ears. Now I see a footnote here. The name of the Ritva. You also have either of these footnotes?
I don't see this one.
So I have a footnote number 8.
No, I don't have this one.
All right, so I'll just read it to you, number 8. He quotes the Ritva, and the Ritva says, just one second. Oh, actually, you know what? You're right, I jumped the gun. We have to read another line in the Gemara to appreciate this Ritva. The Ritva says that on the next line, when the Gemara says, Rabbi Yanai nafik behula karmelis v'chalukim olav koldoro, a similar story with regard to Rabbi Yanai, that even though he didn't go through a Rishus HaRabim, he only went through a karmelis, nevertheless the rabbis objected. Says the Ritva, because everybody held that once the Rabbanan made a decree, and they required, as we saw in the Brice, that you have to tie down this earplug in order to allow you to carry it in Rishus HaRabim, then we should apply it ipso facto to a caramelist. You know, it's anything that's prohibited in a Rishus HaRabim is ipso facto prohibited in a caramelist. So the Ritva is assuming, or postulating, if you will, an equation between a caramelist and Rishus HaRabim. I mean, I would have said, without the Ritva, that there's a fundamental difference. A caramelist is only Darabbanan. So even in the worst case scenario, if you carry something in a caramelist, you don't violate any sort of an Issa D'oraisa. And here, what are we afraid of? That the wad in his ear is going to fall off? I mean, who says it's going to fall off? And even if it falls off, is he going to carry it? Ah, it wasn't tied down. So it might fall off. So I don't know if after the Machmir and a caramelist. But somehow, according to the Dvar, the Chachomim postulated an equation between a caramelist and a Rishus HaRabim. Now the Gemara goes back to ask about Rabbi Yochanan. Vatani Rami Bar Chama Vushakoshal Abiyazno. Was Rabbi Yochanan completely oblivious, or was he completely unconcerned with the brisa of Rami Bar Chama that requires as a precondition that you tie it down? And yet he went out into Rishus HaRabim without tying it down. Rabbi Yana is not such a kasha, because at least he was only going into caramelists. Lo kasha, hod mahadek, hod lo mahadek. There are two different ways of plugging up your ear. You could do it in a way that it's tight, and it's really permanent. It's not going to fall off. Or you could just put it into your ear. You know, a lot of people are very scared about pushing something into their ear. It could be very, very dangerous. So they leave it sort of attached to the ear. It's hanging on the outside of the ear. I don't mean the full ear. I mean that part of the ear. So in that case, it might fall off. And therefore, the brisa requires that you tie it down. That's according to the Gemara's final maskani in order to justify Rabbi Yochanan's activities. Now the Mishnah says that there are other things that you are allowed to wear, to put into your mouth, because they're very helpful and very healthy, like the pilpel ubegalgal melach, a peppercorn and a lump of salt. So the Gemara asks, what are these good for? What's the health advantage? And the Gemara says, pilpel reach hapeh and melach lidarshine. So reach hapeh means bad odor from your mouth. And if you have a toothache, let's say you have what's it called, a cavity? Well, you know, you have some sort of an infection in your tooth. Then the salt is helpful. I would think that the salt is only helpful on a temporary basis. I don't know that it has any long term medicinal effect. For that, I think we should ask our experts in dentistry, see what they say. So we have here a statement in the Gemara that salt is good for tooth disease, and therefore it's not considered carrying because you're wearing it for health purposes. V'chol davar shenitan l'toch piha. So the Mishnah now makes a general statement. Anything that she puts in her mouth is not considered carrying if she does it for a certain, you know, certain benefits. So, for example, the Gemara gives a couple of examples here. Zangabilo, which is ginger in English. Inami dartsona, which is cinnamon. And these things have a therapeutic function. He says that since it's good for healing, therefore it's not considered a masa, it's not carrying. Shein tosefes, toseves shein, shein shel zohav, is Rebbe Matir Chacham Osman. So she has a false tooth, and it's made of gold, and that's machlok shein Rebbe is Mekil, and the Chacham Osman. On Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Zera says that there are certain cases where even the Chachamim agree that it's mutter. This Gemara I can't figure out. Maybe you can tell me pshat. Omer Rav Zeira lo shanu el shel zov. Avol shel kesef divrei hakol mutter. Even the Chacham allow if it's silver. She's not going to bother with silver. Now, I'm not exactly sure what's going on over here. Silver is expensive. I mean, all of a shas, silver is considered something chashuv. I don't know why. Maybe because it's only a small amount of silver. He writes here, Rashi says, Avol shel kesef shedome l'shar hashinayim divrei hakol mutter. Again, I don't know why silver looks like other teeth. Maybe it means that you could possibly camouflage the silver with the enamel of the tooth. I don't know. Loshen rabosai. So Rashi first quotes his rabbis, and then he disagrees. He says maybe he might disagree for that reason. Maybe he holds that silver is also very different than the other teeth. He says, Liner at time of the shel zov mishum de chashiva v'osa lach le'asuye l'kach osu avol shel kesev lo chashiva lo osi l'asuye. This is a pella to me. The Gemara, according to Rashi, is telling us that if this tooth falls off, this fake tooth, and it's made of silver, I don't know what's going to happen. She's just going to leave it there? Now, if it's made of gold, she'll certainly bring it back home. And then she violates Meleches Havara. But not in the case of silver. I don't know. Now he tells you why he rejects the Rabosov. He says, L'loshon Rabosai, Kashali, Hodi Omer Abaye. So wait a minute. I don't know if we got to Abaye yet. Let me just see. Do we get to Abaye? Rebbe Reb Shimon Elozer. So you know what? Let's put one finger on this Rashi, and we'll go back to the Gemara. The Gemara says, Tanya Nami Hochi, Rabbi Brisa, to support this statement of Rabbi Zera, B'shel Kesef Diriyah Kol Mutter, Shel Zav Rebbe Mati V'chacham Osrim. So Rebbe will allow her to go out in Rishus Aram with a tooth made of gold, and, to start showing off false teeth, and then it might fall off, or this, that, and the other thing. That's not something we should be afraid of, because that would be very embarrassing, to take out your false tooth. Oh, look at this gold tooth that I have. Okay, next. Omer Abaye, Rebbe, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, Kulu Svirle, Dechol Midi, Demeganye, Be Lo Asiel Asuye. So this whole list that Abaye is quoting of Tanoim, they all agree that if you have something that causes gnai means it looks disparaging to a person, embarrassing to a person, lo asiel asuye, we would never suspect that such a person would go out into Rishus HaRabim, take it off in order to show it to someone, and then carry it back. Once he takes it off, he'll be extremely embarrassed. And the Gemara now goes through each one of these Tanoim that Abai quoted. Rebbe, Hodamara. So Rebbe, we have already in the case of the gold tooth. So she would not take out a gold tooth because that's going to be a source of gnai, of embarrassment. Rebbe Eliezer, Tisanya, Rebbe Eliezer, Poter, Bekoveles, Ubitzlucha, Shal Plop. Flyton, so that if she's wearing some sort of a flask of fragrance smelling stuff, like a spice bundle or a flask of balsam oil, and the reason she's wearing this is because she's trying to conceal her body odor, so we don't think that she would even dream of taking it off to show it off, because then she'll be embarrassed by her body odor. Rav Shimon Elazar, the sign we have a a brisa of Reb Shimon Klal Amar Reb Shimon Loza Kol Shu Lamata Min Asvacha Yotza Ba. So there are certain things that a woman would wear below her hat, and if it's below her hat, she's not going to show it off because then she'll expose her hair. She'll be embarrassed. But Lamala Min Asvacha, you have things that are attached on top of the head, on top of the hat. Any yotzeba, she's not allowed to wear them in a public area because she might actually take them off without exposing her hair because it's on top of her hat. So let's just go back to the Rashi now and to explain why Rashi objects to the lashon of his rabbis who say that in the case of a false tooth that's made out of silver, then It's very similar to her other teeth. He says, Lashon Rabosai Kashali. Hodi Amar Abayi Rebbe Reb Shimon Elazar v'chulei. They all say the same thing, that if it's embarrassing to take it off, then you're allowed to wear it in Rishus HaRab. Me'itami the Rabbanon. Mishum. If the reason why the Rabbanon are machmir, in the case of a gold tooth, is because a gold tooth is different than the other teeth, and therefore they can embarrass her, as opposed to the case of a silver tooth, which is similar to the other teeth. Is my shna Rebbe to kachoshev le? Why does Abaye pin this on Rebbe? And Rebbe's the one who says that if it's something embarrassing, then she's allowed to go, if it was taken off, she's allowed to wear it in Rishus HaRab, and Rabbanan Nami Lav Lachve Chayshi. Even the Rabbanan is saying that she's not going to take it off because she's embarrassed in the case of a gold tooth. Why would she take out a gold tooth? So again, according to the Rebbeim of Rashi, that the difference between a gold tooth and a silver tooth is that in the case of a gold tooth, she might be tempted to take it out. Just one second. Oh yeah, because it looks embarrassing because it stands out amongst her teeth. You know, it shines in the light, this gold tooth. So if that be the case, then basically the Rabbanon agree that if you have something that she would be inhibited to take, so she only takes it out because she's embarrassed and people are ridiculing her. But if on the other hand, by taking it out she'll be embarrassed, then for sure we don't have to worry about it. She's not going to take it off in the middle of Rishus HaRab. So why does Abaye have to pin this all on Rebbe, even the Chachamim of Rebbe, who differentiate between a silver false tooth and a gold false tooth, it's all based on whether she'll be ridiculed. And if there's a very stark and obvious contrast between this false tooth and her natural teeth, that's when we have to worry that she might take it out and carry it. And that's exactly what it says here in Abaye's principle, Kol Midi the Meganya Bei Lois. Lo asio lach suye. Yesh le taretz. Now, I have a feeling now Rashi is going to try to defend his Rebbeim. I think. Yesh le taretz, the Rabbanan Mesar ka asre mikol makom. Just one second, what does mikol makom mean? Mikol makom. I don't know, we're talking about a gold tooth, a false gold tooth. So what is he? I'm not sure what Rashi means by mikol makom. V'rebi matir dekasavar lo chayche Allah. They're not going to ridicule her if she wears if her false tooth is gold. V'lo shalfalit, if she's not going to take it out, remove it out of embarrassment. Umiu havile lemechish dilma shafla mishum achve. And if you'll say, well, maybe she'll take it off in order to show it off. It's a very expensive ornament. It's made of gold. So he says, Lo Shalfa. She would not take it off. Mishum di machvile, if she shows it off, kinusavi. It's embarrassing that she has to wear a false tooth. So how does that explain, according to the Rabbanon, who disagree with Rabbi, the distinction between a gold tooth and a silver tooth? I guess the Rabbanon are afraid that that somehow, because it's gold, she might actually take it out to show it off, even though she'll be embarrassed about the fact that she's wearing a false tooth. So therefore, Abaye could not quote the Rabbanon. It's only Rebbe who's saying that because she'd be embarrassed because she's wearing a false tooth, therefore she wouldn't show it off. The Rabbanon never accepted that principle. Alright. But again, Rashi himself says that the reason for the gold is because actually it's so significant that she might actually show it off. Which is the In effect, I think it comes out the way we interpreted it, that both Rashi and his Rabosov are explaining the Chachamim because she might actually take out the tooth and show it off. Alright, let's look at the Mishnah. The Mishnah is going to enumerate other things that she's allowed to wear on Shabbos and Rishus Rav Yotzea, Besela, Sha'al Hatzinis. So Sela is a coin, and what is Tzinis? Just one second, I have here a Hebrew translation. Let me just see if he tells you what a tzinis is. Oh, he says a tzinis is a maka, some sort of an injury that she has, bekaf haregel. So if I understand correctly, it's on the bottom of the foot. What's that called? The sole?
The soul, yeah.
So she has an injury, some sort of wound on her soul, and apparently the coin somehow cushions the foot from the shoe. Well, maybe it has some other medicinal positive beneficial effect. Habonos, in the case of girls, is ktanos, if they're young, is yotzos bechutin. They wear these threads. Afilu bekesamin shebeoznehem. Ah, I see. So these chutim are either threads or possibly little piece of wood. And she's allowed to put that through her ear if she's a youngster. Why? Because she wants to maintain the hole in her ears. They pierced her ears. And you gotta, you know, if you don't immediately put stuff inside the hole, this I remember from my kids, then it closes up.
Right.
I guess it was more common for young girls to have their ears pierced, which is true today as well.
Yeah.
Arvios, I guess the Jewish women that lived in Arabic countries, Yotzos, Reulos, right, because the standard of the Arabians was, as we see today, you know, they wrap themselves, all you can see is their eyes. So if that be the case, Yotzos Reulos, they're allowed to be covered totally from head to toe. Even though in other countries, that would not be an appropriate way to dress. Umidios, and in Madai, Prufos. Prufos means they used to wear these capes, and to make sure that the cape would be weighed down, so they would attach stones or nuts, and that weight would make sure that it was their cloaks would be fastened and would not you know, just fly off. And v'chol adam, this is not only true of women who came from Madai, but it's true for chol adam. So he writes here in a footnote that anyone may go out on Shabbos wrapped in a cloak that's fastened with a button, even if it's only a makeshift button. So it doesn't matter what country you're coming from. But it was customary in those Median countries that they would wear these kinds of a prufos. Then the Mishnah says, "Porefes al ha'even v'al ha'egos v'al matbea u'bivad shelo tifros l'chatchila b'shavus." So she's allowed to put these buttons on, or the way we called like the weights on the cloak, made of nuts or coins or stones, but she has to set that up before Shabbos. In other words, she's not allowed to fasten these kind of buttons on Shabbos, which I think would be a violation of what we call makeh b'patish. You know, she'd be creating a kli by adding a button to the kli. Obviously, she's not sewing it down, because that would be a melech of tofer or kosher. But nevertheless, it's awesome. So we go back to the beginning of the Mishnah. Might see this. He says, Bas Ara. Is that what it says? Bas Ara? Let me just see. Yeah. I also have Bas Ara. Right, you know, the first line in the Gemara. So this is a... Yeah, this is a... she attaches the sole to the sole of her foot. She attaches a sela, umayshna sela. Why a sela? She has some sort of bang or a wound on the bottom of her foot. Elema called me the dakusha mi'alile. Any hard substance could form a wedge between her foot and the ground. Is lievid le chaspa? Well, why should she use a coin? Why not just take a piece of earthenware that's called chaspa, a piece of pottery? That should do the job. Elamishum sh. What's this word? Shuchsa? Shuchsa?
Yeah.
What's shuchsa? Shuchsa, he says, is that silver. The silver coin, the sela, has the advantage of adding moisture. Okay, somehow the moisture promotes healing. If that be the case, li avid la tasa. Why doesn't she just take a silver plate, a flat silver, you know, thin silver surface, and that itself has apparently moisture to it. Elamishum tsurasa, right? Every coin had an image that was stamped on it. And somehow this image is therapeutic. He writes here that it was believed in earlier times that graven images were useful in healing. I know this sounds pretty spooky to me. Anyway, the Gemara says, le'evid le pulsa. She can take a piece of wood and she can etch an image onto the wood. She doesn't have to go out with a sela. Notice that the sela has all the advantages. Number one, it's hard, so that protects her. Number two, it's moist. And number three, it has an image on it. So the Mishnah gives you this example of a coin which has all the positive therapeutic qualities that would need that she would need. Now, it seems to me, let me just see if I'm right about this, that if you're lacking any of the elements that you have in a sela, so like, let's say, for example, she would use a chaspa, or a shuksa, or a tsursa, then that would be a masa. That would not be the normal way that she would put something around the wound of her foot. You know, why use a second class therapeutic method when you could use something more appropriate, like a sela? So therefore, it would become a masa. Habanos yotzos bechuvtin. Avur de Shmuel lo shavik le lebinse linofke dinofke bechutin. He was more machmir, Shmuel, and he would, the father of Shmuel, I should say, and he would not allow his daughters to go out in Rishus HaRabim with these chutim in their ears. So I think what the Gemara is now doing is it's giving you a whole list of chumras, of stringencies that Avud Shmuel would impose upon his daughters. I guess he was very enamored with his daughters and he wanted to make sure that they would go on the right path, and he would give all sorts of stringencies that he would impose on his daughters. V'lo shaviklu ganyon gabe hadadi. Ganyon means to sleep, and he wouldn't allow them to sleep one next to the other, I guess in the same bed. And we'll see why in a minute. V'yavidlu mikvos b'yomei Nisan. And during the days of Nisan, when most of the women who went to a mikveh, they would immerse themselves in the pras, Nahar Pras, I guess that was the river that was located close to Bavel. But he would not allow them to do that during the months of Nisan. I thought this has to do with security reasons, but no, it has nothing to do with security. Umafti biyome Tishrei. And he would use mats for immersing in this river during the days of Tishrei. All right. Now, he has a note here where he tells you what these mats were all about. They were to prevent the mud on the river bottom from covering the girls' feet, because that would be a chatzitza if they had the mud in between their toes, you know. So therefore, he would have them stand on mats. So now the Gemara goes through all the different minhagim that Shmuel would impose upon his daughters. Number one, lo shavik luhu yotzos bechutin. Ay v'anan tanan abonos yotzos bechutin. So the latter wear these different threads and so forth in their ear in Rishus HaRabim. And the answer is, bonsei di'avu adishmuel ditziv onim havu. So apparently these threads were colored threads, and they were more expensive. They weren't the cheap threads. And he was afraid that maybe one of his daughters would remove the thread to show it off to her companion. They were such special threads. And then she would carry them in Rishus HaRabim. Lo shavik lehu ganyon gabi adodi. He didn't want these girls to sleep in the same bed. Lema misayele l'rav huna. Shall we assume that the reason he didn't allow this was because of the principle of Rav Huna, the Yom Rav Huna, Noshim HaMisolo Zubazu? I guess this is, I wouldn't call it lesbianism, but it's something along that line, if you know what I mean. The beginning of that, and they would rub one another, touch one another, I don't know exactly what, is Psulos LeKahuna. Wow, this is way out. I mean, Rav Huna is going very far. Again, Rashi interprets this as referring to the Kohen Gadol, that she would not be allowed to marry a Kohen Gadol if she was guilty of this kind of this kind of misdemeanor. And the reason for that is because a Kohen Gadol has to marry a Besula. And when these women are doing whatever they're doing, then they lose their status as a Besula. To some extent. Again, it's not a halachic statement over here. So the Kohen Gadol is on the holiest level. So according to the Gzeira of Rav Huna, which was a Drabonon, he's not allowed to marry a woman who was guilty of these kinds of actions. Now, Avud Shmuel was worried about his own daughters. I mean, I don't think he was going to marry them off to the Kohen Gadol, because there was no Kohen Gadol at the time of Avud Shmuel. But nevertheless, from the fact that Rav Huna prohibited them to a Kohen Gadol, it means that this is such an unacceptable, perhaps a repugnant kind of behavior pattern, that Avud Shmuel wanted to take every precaution that such a thing would not happen. So he didn't let them sleep in the same bed. So Gemara rejects this law. You don't have to assume that Avud Shmuel accepted this principle of Rav Huna, but rather, Savarki Hechi Dilo Lilfan Gufa Nuchra'a. Right, Nuchra is an alien, like, you know, in other words, if they get all excited about one another, that's going to lead them to be excited and have a desire to lie with a man. V'yomedlu mikvah biyomei Nisan, and why would he insist that they would go to the mikvah, not in the Euphrates? Right, not in the Nar Pras, where all the other women were going, but his chumra was that she should have to go to a mikvah, which means that Shmuel had to build his own personal mikvah during this period of Nisan. When I say Shmuel, I mean Avud Shmuel. Is Mesayei Alei L'Rav. This is based on Rav. The Omer Rav, Mitra B'Marova, Sahada Rava B'Pras. In other words, if you want to know, you're in Babylonia, and you want to know whether to thank Hashem for the rainwater that fell, an abundance of rainwater that fell in Eretz Yisrael, then all you had to do is take a look at the Nar Pros. And if you saw that there was plenty of rain in Nar Pros, then you knew that there was plenty of rain in Eretz Yisrael as well. So you can thank Hashem for that.
Right.
Now, what we're trying to focus on here is what period of time, in terms of the seasons of the year, was there this is my own language, but I'm exaggerating, but overflow of the Euphrates River. In other words, there was a tremendous amount of rainwater that fell into the river. And that's around Nisan time. Now, let's ask the following question. Who cares about rainwater? I mean, what's so terrible about rain falling into the river? I mean, all over the world we have rivers and we still, oceans and bodies of water, we still, you know, whoever thought, well, there's too much rain coming down, so therefore you can't use it as a mikvah. So the answer is, Savar, Avud Shmuel was afraid, Shema Yirbu Hanotfim Ala Zochlim. What is the ratio between the rainwater and the flowing water of the river? There's a halach called Bittel Barov, which means that if you have more of one quality or one substance mixed with less of another substance, then the majority trumps the minority. That's called Bittel Barov. And in this case, if there'll be too much rainwater falling into the river, and that's going to happen during the month of Nisan, then at the end of the day, the river water, the natural water of the river, is going to be batel, because there's more rainwater than flowing river water. Now, what's the problem over here? Now, rainwater per se is perfectly fine for Tara, meaning what Avud Shmuel is going to do is he's going to dig a ditch in the ground during this period of time, and the rainwater is going to collect in that ditch. So you see that rainwater is kosher from mikvah. And even in the case of... All right, wait, let me leave that out for a moment. So rainwater is kosher from mikvah. So what's his problem? Ah, rainwater is only kosher from mikvah if it's static. A natural spring or a river is only kosher for a mikvah if it flows. And I'll quote to you the psukim in a minute, but let's just work, you know, with those axioms. So now it comes out the following, that the rainwater, once it falls into the river, is flowing. And if it's flowing, then because it's rainwater, it's completely invalid for Tara. The natural water of the river is kosher for a mikvah when it flows. But now the problem is that the rainwater, which is now swept along with the rain, with the river water, and it's now, you know, it's moving and flowing, that's going to possible the rainwater, which is now called Zochlin. So now, if the rainwater becomes possible, and its majority, because of such a massive, ample volume, more than ample volume of rain coming down into the river during this month, then the river water is going to be bottled. So when she goes into the mikvah, very interesting, you see from this Gemara, by the way, that unmarried young girls would go to the mikvah. And the reason for that is because they were makpid on Tumah Vitara. That's why you have all these sugyas about Ochlei Chulin Vitara, and even Shlomo HaMelech made Xavier that we have to wash our hands because of Truma, that our hands should be Tahoros. So it seems that a girl, I'm not exactly sure of the details here, but it seems that even a young girl, in order that she shouldn't come in contact with taros and be metami them, if need be, she would go to the mikvah. And in order to guarantee that her tefillah would be valid, he built his own personal mikvah. Upliga de Shmuel. But Shmuel himself never accepted that view of his father. The Amar Shmuel, Nara Mikefe Mivra. That a river is blessed from its source, meaning it increases because of its own natural water, the spring. In other words, it's not a result of the rainwater. So we don't have to suspect that when the river gets, you know, so it's overflowing, as we said before, it's because there's more rainwater than river water. It's the river water itself that has its own abundance of water. Now, there's a whole discussion here about the difference between mikvah water and river water. So the parsha of Tara and mikvah is in Vayikra Yud Aleph, and there in the same breath the Torah speaks about a spring or a gathering of water. And there are two categories here. There's something called a spring, a natural spring, and then there's a gathering of water, otherwise known as a mikvah. And the difference between the two is that while the spring, which is used for Tara, is flowing, the mikvah has to be still water. So you have water gathered in one place like rainwater, and it's still. Now the river is fed by springs, and despite the fact that it's typically flowing, running water, nevertheless, it's fit for Tara. Rainwater, on the other hand, doesn't emanate from a spring, and therefore, if it's flowing, then it is disqualified for tefillah. Now, if the river now That's what Rabbi Dishmo's worry about, contains more rainwater than spring water. In other words, the water that's flowing now is made up of mostly rainwater. Then rainwater, we said, has to be gathered in one place, and therefore the mikveh is posel. So what Avu Dishmo would do is, during this period of time when the rainwater, you know, was in the majority, or he thought it might be the majority, he would dig a hole. It would get filled with rainwater, and then it was, of course, gathered in one place, and it was a mikvah. And he would not allow his daughters to be tovel during that period of time in the river. However, Shmuel himself was of the opinion, although we'll soon see that it's complicated, but Shmuel held that when the river flows and it's swollen with water, that's not because of the rainwater. That's because of the springs that feed the river. And therefore, there's no problem here for the girls to be tovel in Nar Pras, even during this period of time. So Gemara asks the kashu, pliga di day adi day. Shmuel seems to contradict another statement that he himself made. Di Omer Shmuel, ein amayim mitarin bezochlin, el pras biyomi tishrei bilvad. So that when you have rainwater and it's flowing in the river, that's a problem. The only exception is Yomei the Tishrei, because during the months of Tishrei, that period of time, there's a very limited amount of rainwater from the summer. The summer is basically dry as far as the sky is concerned. But clearly, during the Nisan period of time, Shmuel would prohibit going to the mikveh in a river. He would have to be suspicious of the greater volume of rainwater. And the Gemara doesn't even bother to reconcile this. It seems to be a stira. The Ran, on the other hand, claims that you could reconcile the two statements of Shmuel. And although Shmuel holds that the increase of water in the river is because of the feeder springs, nevertheless, he's machmir because he doesn't know. Maybe those who disagree with him, they might be right, so he always wants to take all the precaution. Now the Mishnah says, Porefes al ha'evan. Right, we talked about the cloak that surrounds her chest, and you add a kind of a stone onto it, or a nut, or something. But you're not allowed to fasten that on Shabbos. Now the Gemara questions this premise that fastening it on Shabbos would be a problem. Hamit Reisha Porefes. The Reisha itself says Porefes. So that from the Reisha we could derive the conclusion that you're allowed to fasten these items on Shabbos. How did the Mishnah go ahead in the same breath and prohibit it? Omar Abaye, Seifa Asa'on Limatbea. That when the Brisa says that this attachment has to be fastened before Shabbos, but not on Shabbos, we're talking about only the case of a matbea. And a matbea is mukta. We've discussed this on many occasions, and therefore you would not be allowed to fasten a matbea onto the beged on Shabbos itself. Had you done it before Shabbos, you've re-designated it as a button. You know, it's part of fastening a beged, so that it's no longer muktzah. But to do that on Shabbos is for sure prohibited. Boy Abaye, Isha Maushetarim Vitifrof al Egos Lahotzi Libno Katan B'Shabbos. So now that you've told me, according to Abaye, that the only Issa to fasten on this button applies to a matbea, to a coin, then would a woman be allowed to tie on this nut onto a beged on Shabbos, use it as a button, in order to carry it from her rishus through her rishus harabim, to give it to a child who wants to eat this nut? Is tiboy leman di omer ma'arimin? Tiboy leman di omer ein ma'arimin. We're going to have a machlokes about whether or not you're allowed to use harama in order to evade a prohibition of Shabbos. And this question that Abai is raising is a valid question according to both opinions, whether it's the opinion that allows Harama on Shabbos or the opinion that doesn't allow Harama on Shabbos. We have a case where there's a danger because of a fire that'll burn up clothing, and a person wants to wear clothing, one pair of clothing on top of the other, outside of Rishus HaRabim, in order to protect it from the fire. And one Mandi Omer says you're allowed to do that. And even though in general, let's say, if not for Roma, you would not be allowed to carry these begadim, even in a chatzer for that matter, but Harama is okay. But maybe Hasam who de'ilo sharisle osi lechabuye, maybe we have an extreme shasat chak here, that we're going to find a way of permitting him to wear these clothing and save them from the fire, because otherwise he might extinguish the fire. That's called Adam Bo'al al Mamono. A person is, you know, he does not, that's thinking clearly on Shabbos. He comes up in his mind with some sort of calculation that he's allowed to do this. So we have to make sure that he does the least of all evils in this urgent situation. We're going to allow him to wear these begadim and do our Rama. Aval Hocha. But here in this case of the cloak, Ilo Sharisle Lo Asi Lafuke, we don't begin to think or suspect that if we don't permit the subterfuge, he's going to carry it out by hand because he wants the boy to receive the nut. This is not a Shasat Chak, this is not Adam Bo'al al Mamono. So even the Tana, who in general allows Harama in the case of donning many articles to save them from the fire, might possibly agree that this kind of harama, to carry something through Rosh Hashanah Rabin by fastening it as a button to a coat, might be prohibited. Oh, then what should we say? Afilu man diomer ain marivin. Like, now we can go to the other extreme. Even that man diomer who prohibits wearing many articles of clothing in the case of the fire, that's only there. Hosam derech hotzav v'kach, aval hocha ain derech hotzav v'kach ain mashapir dami. And the Gemara ends up with teku. The case of many articles of clothing, one on top of the other, that's not called malbush, but yet it is derech hotzav, because, let's say, for example, mochrik sus we spoke about, they will actually put layers of clothing on in order to transport them. So as far as hotzav, which means transportation from one rishus to the other, this is considered a valid, normal way of transporting, so it would be derech hotzav, and yet it's not a malbush. So malbush, that's not derech hotzah, would be a violation of the Isa Doraisa, the Malacha Doraisa of hotzah. But in the case that we have here, by fastening a nut to a cloak, that's not called derech hotzah. Who would carry something in that way? So even in the worst case scenario, there's not going to be any violation of Doraisa. So maybe to use this as a Harama, we would allow it. Even that Tana who doesn't allow it where you're doing something that's a Malach Doraisa, you would allow it here. Teku, the Gemara leaves it as an unanswered question. And this leads us to the Mishnah on the bottom of Samachayim and Beis, the Mishnah of Kita Bekavshalo, and that Mirz Hashem will cover in the next year.